Hey, well, let me call. I'm State Rep Carlos Mariani, Chair of the House Conferees to the Conference Committee on Public Safety and Judiciary Omnibus Bill. I'm going to call this meeting to order. Members, today's agenda is really quite simple. May 15th, 2 days before we are scheduled to adjourn our regular legislative session. Quite frankly, if our omnibus bills have not been agreed to by now, we're simply not going to be able to logistically complete the work that we're required to complete, or perhaps, well, required and expected to complete by the people of Minnesota within the time frame that we've set up under constitutional rules, excuse me, to conduct a regular legislative session. That's really a shame, members. I certainly hope that there aren't any members on any body or in any caucus that feels good about the fact that we have not completed our work. And so what I want to do today is just make some opening comments about the nature of the task that was, well, I suppose still is before this conference committee, and speak to my perspective in terms of why that hasn't happened, which is, quite frankly, unacceptable to me. I'm going to call on House conferees to then share, what has been on the table, because that's what we should be talking about, what's on the table, and make comments about that. I'll open up for any conversations, and then we'll be adjourning. And so I don't expect that we're going to be using our entire period of time here today. I should, however, begin by asking, because it's fair to do so, and certainly my intent to be transparent and engaging with our colleagues in the Senate. I've not heard anything from our Senate conferees relative to the five offers that the House has put on the table one day after the other over the course of almost 2 weeks. And so I don't want to assume that there isn't a response. And so I'm going to ask the Senate if they have any update relative to those offers that the Minnesota House conferees have put on the table.
Chairman
Liver.
Ms. Chairman, were you waiting for a response from anyone?
Chairman Liver, indeed I was, or I am.
Were you asking me for a response?
I'm asking the Senate, whether it's you, Chairman, or Senate conferees to provide a response to.
I'm sorry, Ms. Chairman, I was briefly interrupted at the time.
I get it. Happens to me all the time, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you know, we do not have budget targets. It's well known that our leadership in both respective bodies and the governor has not arrived at those budget targets. Many of the areas of our bill obligate ourselves to constitutionally dedicated purposes, and they have not done that. Some of the proposals and policies that we've listened to are also linked to significant appropriations. Not much we can do about that either. All of the other policies that have been discussed so far cannot be passed unless there's a budget, and there is no budget. So quite honestly, due to matters outside of our control, we could not pass this bill today. We could not arrive at something to recommend to the respective House chamber and Senate chamber. And it looks like we're going into a special session with the remaining time that's left. And as a result of that, that's kind of where we are.
Thank you, Chairman Limmer. With that, members, I want to make a few framing comments. I want to ask my House conferees to share their views. Certainly would invite the Senate to share theirs. And, you know, barring some movement of engaging in any possible agreements, then we'll adjourn today's conference committee. Let me just begin by saying that patience is indeed a virtue. It's a very difficult virtue, probably one of the most difficult. Chairman Lemon, you probably agree with me on this. It is difficult, however, no, let me put it this way. There is a point at which what's required isn't patience anymore. There's a point at which what's required is to simply act. And as we near a hard stop deadline, that seems to be the last mandate that's required of all of us is, okay, you know, involved and patient, but truly we need to act now. And that is true of this moment. Unfortunately, that's not going to happen. So I'm not going to belabor the point of the Senate's inaction and what should have been in straightforward negotiation over our respective omnibus public safety and judiciary bills. To say that the Senate's posture of failing to engage in constructing a negotiated bill is a major disappointment to me, that would be an understatement, actually, that it's a major disappointment, because, in fact, I think what we've demonstrated here is a dereliction of our duty to serve the basic needs of the people of Minnesota for self-governance, to ensure our freedoms. Providing for the public safety is a core function of government. Our civilization can't be free if we are not safe in our homes and communities. It's actually a pretty simple but powerful concept. And so, members, the passage of an omnibus public safety bill is how our state guarantees both the resources and the policies to equip our public systems to meet the people's needs to be safe. And failing to even try to forward such a bill, which is apparently what's happening here this weekend, quite frankly, is a betrayal of the trust that Minnesotans bestow on its legislature, and I don't feel good about that. So make no mistake, however, the Minnesota House conferees have worked to get to a needed negotiated bill. Let me tell you how we've tried to do that. It's really pretty simple. We convened every day whenever the House held the gavel, in order to engage the Senate. Our Senate counterparts, on the other hand, not only delayed the commencement of this conference committee several days, but chose not to meet in two of the days in which it held the gavel, two of the 6 days. It's hard to get work done if we're not meeting. The House made an offer to have the conference committee adopt same and similar language that exists in both the Senate and House bills. I know that's a redundancy, but it's important to for the public to understand what it means, same and similar. It's language that is in both bills. The House did that as a way to get us started on putting together the required common bill that's expected of this conference committee. And in doing so, you know, all we did was ask the Senate to accept into the beginnings of a negotiated bill the very same language the Senate had passed off its floor into this committee. It's been 11 days, members, since the proposal, that proposal was made. And it's been 11 days that the Senate has simply not responded with a counteroffer, with an alternative idea on which to engage around that same and similar language. Sometimes our Senate colleagues have argued that it needed more time to read what they had already passed. And sometimes they argued that they couldn't act on what they had already passed until they received an appropriation level, or what's called a target, from the leaders of our two legislative bodies. Meanwhile, members, other conference committees also awaiting those targets have made agreements, particularly on same and similar language. The Health and Human Service Omnibus Conference Committee to date has agreed to 60 provisions, 60. The House also made four other offers of mostly policy provisions. Again, the customary approach is to offer language in our bills to one another to see where there is interest in diving deeper to get to agreements. We can begin to focus in on those areas of interest, and we can then organize ourselves to come forward with a suggested agreement framework for that provision. That often involves, individual members teaming up, in dyads or one-on-ones, et cetera, to bring, those agreements back. This is really quite doable in the bills before us because, members, there actually is a lot of agreement, at least on paper, between the two bodies. There are a number of provisions that enjoy both House and Senate authorship. That enjoy bipartisan support, as demonstrated by certainly in the House, as demonstrated by votes on bills. I suspect in the Senate as well, but the Senate has chosen not to respond to those offers either. That's five offers. The Senate has also asserted that the only purpose of an omnibus bill conference committee is to address only finance matters, that we cannot spend any time coming to agreement on policy because our goal is to only focus on finance matters, or that we have to do that first before we can even entertain such a conversation. I have to say to the public, that's just absolutely not true. And in fact, it is the norm for these conferences to produce both policy and finance solutions to the pressing issues of the day. I have been part of those conference committees over the years doing precisely that. And, some of the pressing issues of the day are pretty, unfortunately, uncomfortable but necessary, like police accountability, like people dying of neglect in our jails, or like the predatory nature of our fines and fee structure in our court systems that further drive regular Minnesotans unnecessarily deeper into our criminal justice system. I know there's bipartisan support for that, but there's nothing even tentatively agreed to in this conference committee on that issue. I suspect, and I can only suspect, because I haven't heard anything officially back from my Senate colleagues, I suspect that the Senate has studiously avoided wanting to engage in a meaningful negotiation because of the House's call for what I believe are actually moderate yet meaningful and common sense police accountability. If so, the irony is that we certainly heard testimony days ago, last week, from law enforcement that there are numerous provisions that they could work through. But that would require movement on the part of the conference committee. It's called exercising leadership. But the Senate has ensured that no such leadership, that no such movement would happen prior to today, 2 days from a legislative adjournment, and even today, there's no Senate movement whatsoever. So members, this is more than about process. This is more than about inside baseball. I would argue, and I think it's why Senator Latz, suggested the other day to reach outside of ourselves and look at what it is that guides us in terms of our worldviews and our expectations of our humanity. This is about moral vision. The inaction made possible by the Senate's unwillingness to engage in negotiations, I would say, is an abandonment of exercising the moral leadership that our laws should always reflect. It's not about accepting the House proposals. Obviously, I think the House has great proposals. I think the Senate should embrace those. At the very least, however, the Senate should engage in those. So this isn't about accepting the House proposals. What's happening is, let me put it this way. This is about not ignoring the anguish calls of Minnesotans who have been hurt and harmed by our systems. That doesn't make our systems bad. It makes them required to change their practices. That's what we as lawmakers are called to do when we pass laws that both provide resources and provide policy directions to our systems. In this case, our public safety systems. You know, members, it was the day before Mother's Day. The day before Mother's Day, when we heard Mama Perry, whose son died horribly over 7 days while in the custody of a county jail, we heard her voice call on her legislators to pass laws to prevent and ensure that something like this wouldn't happen to another mother, to another beloved son. We also heard the voice of Mama Wright, who seconds after speaking with her son on a cell phone, who was seeking her advice after being stopped by police for an apparent minor administrative traffic-related issue, learned that he had just been shot to death by those public safety state license officials, an unarmed, not attacking young man who perished unnecessarily on that day. We heard her painful voice. I don't think there was a single member here from either body or from either caucus who wasn't touched by the testimony of these two grieving mothers who had the courage to come forward and ask us to do what all citizens should be asking us to do, which is to exercise our duty to shape laws in order to prevent something like that happening ever again. That's not asking too much. These are simple Minnesotans, and I don't use the word simple in a derogatory way. These are everyday people who absolutely should expect that our systems of public safety should, in fact, keep them safe. And they look to us and the laws to create the laws to be better at doing that in order to achieve that. And so, you know, perhaps, we don't know because we haven't gotten any responses from our colleagues. So perhaps to avoid that hard but needed conversation, the Senate, in its inaction, is willing to not engage not only on those issues, but on all the many other issues in this omnibus public safety corrections judiciary bill. And that is a further shame that we have a mountain of work and expectations in front of us to meet that core function of government. And right now, entering into May 17th, our constitutionally designated day in which to complete our work, this conference committee is saying, well, we're not going to meet that duty. That's unacceptable, members. It's unacceptable. But that's where we're at. So members, I'm going to stop there. I'm going to ask a few of my colleagues who have asked me to call on them to share their thoughts about the work that we should have been doing over the course of the last 2 weeks, that I would argue the House has certainly taken the initiative to try to make happen, but have not received the reciprocal engagement from our Senate colleagues in order to make it happen, because it takes two, to make things happen. So with that, I'm going to ask Representative Mueller to share her thoughts with us here today. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. So members, this bill is about access to justice for Minnesotans. And I'd like to focus on how our bill provides access to survivors and victims of crime. The House made an offer that was related to crime victim provisions. There were 13 items listed in that offer, all of which have bipartisan support. Several of those items are also in the Senate omnibus bill, and there's no reason why we can't agree on many of those proposals right now. Our bill provides for survivor support and prevention grants, and we've heard, I know I've received a lot of emails from across the state, and I assume other conferees have too, from a number of advocacy programs about the need to support funding for victims of sexual assault, domestic violence, and general crime. The bill contains provisions related to human trafficking. It improves the Safe at Home program and the processing of U visa certification documents. It has many important provisions that survivors of sexual violence told us were needed, from the comprehensive reform based on the recommendations of the Criminal Sexual Conduct Working Group to the BCA investigation of National Guard sexual assaults that survivors from the National Guard told us were necessary. Survivors also described how the arbitrary statute of limitations in criminal cases further silences them. And victim survivors are silenced by the fear of prosecution for underage consumption of alcohol or drugs if they or someone assisting them make a report and they aren't provided for immunity. Several of the provisions in our bill are based on the extensive work that stakeholders did over various items, and that includes the Sexual Assault Working Group and the civil asset forfeiture reform in our bill. We know that other similar groups are anxious to do the work that assists us in, as policymakers in providing access to justice for Minnesotans. This includes the Missing and Murdered African American Women Task Force and the Predatory Offender Registration Working Group that the Criminal Sexual Conduct Reform Group said was necessary. Our bill creates a task force on aiding and abetting felony murder, another area that needs reform, and a task force that has bipartisan support. I'll also note that for victims to achieve justice, the criminal system must be a trusted system. And many of the other provisions in our bill speak to that. When we have a system that is trusted, victims are more likely to report crimes. Witnesses are more likely to come forward, and juries are more likely to hold guilty people accountable. While it is true that we are awaiting budget targets from leadership, as you said, Mr. Chair, it is also true that most other conference committees have agreed on policy items already. We don't need budget targets to act on many of the items in our bill. There's simply no reason to wait. No reason to not provide access to justice that Minnesotans are asking us to provide. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, would you like me just to proceed? Is that correct?
I am muted. I apologize to you, Representative Miller. I'm like, why can't he hear me? And it's like, well, because I'm muted. Representative Miller, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm going to be discussing the juvenile justice portion, but as I was sitting here listening, I do want to make one comment, and this is to you, Chair Mariani. I want to thank you for allowing me to participate on the House side. You know, with the House and Senate separated out, we don't always know what each other are doing. I know that I was very much a non-traditional choice to be on this conference committee, and I was very honored to be selected after I made some, maybe for some people, some rather questionable choices. But I really wanted to think that, you know, public safety is one of our core roles in our state for state government, and I think we need to look at it differently. And so I stuck my neck out to try and influence that, and I was honored enough to be in this committee as part of that. And I want to thank you for allowing me to be candid. You've kept me in, I think, just about every meeting on the House side. You may have had a couple Democrat-only huddles, but to my knowledge, I was mostly involved. And the members are very aware that I don't agree with some of the provisions in this bill. I've been very clear about that. I've been very, very direct when I think that things need to be discussed. And if you will, from the Senate's perspective, some things that I think Democrats need to hear about some of these issues. And Chair and the other members on the House side have been welcome enough to listen. And I think that is one of the things that the people of Minnesota are calling on us to do. We've got work to do as their elected officials, and we need to listen to each other. I've built some good friendships off of it. Representative Frazier, Cedric Frazier, and I got together for breakfast the other morning and learned a lot about each other. Do we agree on the issues? No. If we have to face off head-to-head on some of the issues, we're going to disagree with force because we disagree on some things. But we can have those conversations primarily because we were able to listen. So I do want to touch on the juvenile justice reform part. I'm very, very honored to work in this. I've worked a great deal over the last couple of years with Curtis Shanklin, who's been the lead on this from the Department of Corrections. We've talked at length. And while I'm not an expert on this issue at all, their thinking of what they want to do in juvenile justice aligns very strongly with my values and what I think should be the values of the state of Minnesota. The character of the U.S., something that we have always prized and honored, is that we've made a distinction that there's a difference between children and adults, and in many different areas, but we recognize that their development, their social skills, just their competency to be able to do things make a difference. And because of that, we need to recognize that how laws are applied to children are different. In the past couple of years, I mentioned this one or two meetings ago, I've done quite a work with Representative Pinto in sex trafficking, primarily with the Safe Harbor No Wrong Door with trafficked children. And it makes a fundamental distinction that children are different. The juvenile justice legislation, I think in this has been well discussed, well informed, and I think it addresses some of the issues in our system. And one of the things that I want to note is that these provisions recognize that there still needs to be accountability for behavior regardless of the age. I also think it's important to note that these measures do not remove one tool of the justice system without providing something else. I don't think juvenile justice reforms should be controversial. And I know that in the House, they've come out of committee very strong. It was referenced by Chair Mariani earlier that many of these provisions have either been co-authored bipartisanly in the Senate. I think there has been some of this stuff that has been addressed, Chair Limmer, in your committee as well. So I just want to address a couple of those, and I think these are very common sense things that we should address in this year's bill, even in special session. Shackles. I think everyone agrees that children do not need to be in shackles except for when there is a direct and imminent danger to themselves or to the other people around them. We can fix that with this bill. Solitary confinement. Members, this is a very important issue for me. Over the last handful of years when Representative Zerwas was still in the House, he brought this 2 years ago in public safety, and I know that he'd worked on it for a couple of years, and I talked to Commissioner Schnell on this, on adults, nothing can come from being in solitary confinement for long periods of time. That's with adults. But certainly with children, the effects can be even more dramatic. And I think it's important to point out that when they talk about the solitary confinement here, this is not for issues of needing to separate people out from a situation. This is where confinement is used as a punishment and for extended periods of time. I think that the adjustments to strip searches, you know, when I saw the language in strip searches, I thought, what would a 12-year-old girl, you know, that some of the notes that I have say that due to the nature of juvenile detention, there could be strip searches multiple times in a week, sometimes maybe even a couple times in a day. And I just, regardless of what they may have done, to have the effects of like a 12-year-old girl having to deal with something like that is just not needed. As I said, that there's provisions that we can address these things with medical professionals behind curtains. There's things that we can do. I think it's important. This was a challenging one for me, but I think the delinquency age and the confinement age change from 9 to 13. At first, I was concerned about some of the plausibilities of that. So I talked to Curtis, and I said, "What happens when a 12-year-old stabs a neighbor kid because he wants something from him? What happens?" And he said the same thing that happens with a 9-year-old now, and that's that they still have to go before a judge. There is still a justice system that's involved. It's just how we deal with it in its initial steps. But all those initial steps are not to exonerate what happened. It's to address this in a logical way that's age appropriate for children. Some of the alternatives to arrest and some of those things, I think those are things that we need to seriously look at. I think I saw the statistics that 75% of actions of crimes committed by children are delinquent actions, meaning truancy, caught drinking, or things like that. I think we need, as a state, we can recognize that there's a workable solution. Again, that if there's very serious things, we need to address those differently. But if we can bring some of these into the social services, much like the safe harbor for sex trafficked kids, we can address and have a better outcome in the long run. So those are just some of the things that I want to reference. There's other parts of this legislation. Members, my real hope as I've sat through this conference committee is a real desire. This has been my goal. I've told people that anyone that's talked to me, my goal is to have a conference committee report signed with 10 signatures on time by the end of session. We're not going to be able to do that. In the end, we may not have 10 signatures. We may not have all votes. You know, I'm not that much of a dreamer to think that can happen. But my concern is that because of one or two portions that we don't want to deal with, or we don't agree with, or we're not going to allow into there, that a lot of it gets thrown out. When it comes to juvenile justice, I hope that both the House and Senate can come to very real agreements on the provisions that are in there and help us on the front end of our justice system. Because one thing that Curtis Shanklin has always told me is if we can disrupt, if we can interrupt, if we can interject on a child early enough, in many times it will set them on the proper course as opposed to the wrong course. I can tell you, me personally, people don't know much about my life, but through junior high, I was essentially a juvenile delinquent and heading much in the direction of, I don't know if I would have been a criminal in the long run, but I was definitely heading in that direction. And some people that cared about me a lot intervened, and they helped me get on the right course. I had to pay the price for some of the things that I did. I was held accountable, but then they directed me in positive ways. And that really stuck with me, especially when we were looking at those things. So members, we need to have some form of public safety bill coming out of the session. I think we're going to. When we do, I certainly hope that these provisions on juvenile justice can be included in those. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Miller. And thank you for sharing the personal dynamic that, you know, that's there's some vulnerability in that for all of us, but I truly do appreciate it. And I'm thankful for the individuals that interrupted, you know, that pathway in your life, because it no doubt helped lead you to the Minnesota House of Representatives. And that's where my life interacted with yours. So you and I, probably safe to say, we probably vote probably 80% opposite on virtually, you know, everything across the board here. But that's not a barrier, you know, for engaging with one another straightforward and for finding common ground. And so I do appreciate your guidance and your presence in the legislature and in this conference committee. Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just hearing everything that we've discussed so far, you know, I'm gonna name a few bills that I think are very important, their policy, and that I think we should be able to move. But I'll just say, just to start off, we've laid out the bills that could lead to meaningful change in our public safety system. We can create a system that provides safety for all Minnesotans and accountability when there needs to be. However, we're failing to take action that our fellow Minnesotans need. And that makes me extremely sad and disappointed. There's no reason that we can't take action to create an early warning system that can help prevent killings or limit traffic stops that lead to escalated interactions that we've seen in some instances lead to death of that individual that was stopped. We can raise the bar on no-knock warrants, not totally eliminate them, but raise the bar and the threshold to when we use those. That could eliminate some of the mistakes we've seen that lead to death or serving a warrant on a home that's not the right home and terrifying and traumatizing the individuals that live in that home. We can take those actions. We know other committees have moved on policy. We can do the same here. We can show Minnesotans that we can work together. We can show Minnesotans that we care about them. We can show Minnesotans that we know how to do our job and that we know how to act and respond to the community when the community comes and tells us this is what they need and this is what they want and this is how we can make their lives better. But we're failing to do that. Before I close, I just want to say, and I want my GOP colleagues to hear this and to understand, racism is not only intentional harm, but it's also intentional neglect. People in this state lives matter enough to act on policy provisions, like other committees have, before a budget deadline. This gaslighting is an insult to my intelligence and to the suffering of those who cried out for our help. We've seen people protest in the streets. Thanks to the DFL House, we've heard community testify in front of our GOP colleagues, sharing their pain, sharing their suffering, expressing their grief, and begging and hoping that something will be done by sharing that information with us. And yet we're still failing to do anything. Early on in this committee meeting, people cited the problem of broken Black families. And yes, Black was mentioned. It was mentioned as if it just randomly happened, as if to the extent some families face difficulties, it's because of government harm in the past and government neglect in the present. This conference committee validates the worst of what people think of us. Not that we mean them harm, but that we don't care enough to act, especially when we know the harm that has happened and the harm that continues to happen. And I'll just end with this. There is a reason we have to say Black Lives Matter. There's a reason we have to say that. And when we fail to act, when our government officials, our elected officials that were sent here to do a job, that were sent here to make the lives of all Minnesotans better, when we fail to act, and particularly when we fail to act to make the lives better and to right wrongs for the communities that have been harmed the most in a disproportionate manner for decades. That is why communities and individuals have to say that Black Lives Matter. Because if they don't say it, the only narrative that will be out there is one of an elected body that fails to act and fails to show them that their lives really do matter. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're muted, Mr. Chair.
I did it again. I apologize. thank you, Vice Chair Frazier. And and now I want to hear from Chair Beckerfin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And first, I want to, get on the record so folks understand, you know, there's been some talk over the last couple weeks about the numerous bills that are supposedly sitting on the general register related to this omnibus bill that are not being acted on by the House. And the reality is there are only two bills. They are very small. And one of those is a bill that I have chief authored regarding DNR data regarding minors. I believe it's also in our environment omnibus bill. Very easy thing that we can check off the list and get done. And further, if there are things that have passed the Senate floor, they should be easy to agree to here in conference committee. Overall, I was hard to come up with exactly which bills to lift up in this bill because it is a comprehensive bill that increases access to justice and access to safety for thousands of Minnesotans in multiple ways. I this is just the shirt that I was wearing to do yard work this morning, but I am always thinking about our firefighters and, that is another, EMS support, things for our firefighters, the Hometown Heroes Act. Those are things in this bill. And it runs the gamut. It runs the gamut from those kinds of things as well as fines and fees reform, which has strong bipartisan support in both bodies. It is an important bill that has been really decades in the making that decriminalizes poverty and keeps the focus on justice and correcting behavior instead of punishing people who may not have as much money as their neighbors. Other important aspects of this bill, the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office. This is another bill that has been many years in the making. It has bipartisan support. The whole point of people from my community, and I will tell you that Native people, in particular Native women, we're tired of having to lay our souls out here for anyone to listen when we tell you what it is that our community needs so that we can stop stop the trauma from happening to people in our community. And actually the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office is a great example of what happens when we set up a task force. It works well, it comes back within 2 years with recommendations. And then the whole idea is that we hear those recommendations and we keep moving the ball forward. And we've failed to do that by not being able to agree on that. In addition, this bill includes things like increased, and these things that I'm talking about right now are things that would not cost any money. And so we are not required to wait until targets are out to work on these policy provisions. Things like increasing access to court interpreters for public defense clients, updating the Safe at Home program to keep victims' home addresses safe from people who have committed crimes against them. Timely processing of U visa applications, which is strongly supported by law enforcement and actually makes our entire community safer because it increases the ability to prosecute crimes and hold people accountable. Improving data collection for crimes motivated by bias, which has absolutely been something that's on the rise in our communities. Requiring an interactive process for employers, for people needing reasonable accommodations for a disability. These are all things with bipartisan support that could
easily have been agreed on at any point in the last 2 weeks, but they haven't. And so I share other members' frustration that we have not been able to work on these policy provisions because we know that other committees are doing that work. And all we are doing, and I know that I think we all share this, that, you know, we are the ones on this conference committee who are the experts on this. We are the ones who have heard these bills, who have listened to this testimony, who have done the work, who have amended things, have done all this work with our advocates and the public to bring these things forward. And by not working on these things during the conference committee process, we are setting ourselves up for it to be kicked up to leadership so that we aren't part of that conversation. And so it really is, you're hearing frustration from a lot of us because we could be doing this work and we have not, as a conference committee, been able to do that because we don't have the buy-in and the commitment from the other side to actually move some issues forward. And finally, I want to lift up, because I think this is one of the most important aspects, provisions in this bill, and it is a bill that I chief authored but did not actually come from my omnibus bill, and that is the Minnesota Rehabilitation and Reinvestment Act, the MRRA. It is a provision that saves money. It actually focuses on correcting behavior, and it views people who are incarcerated as people who are capable of redemption and puts the focus on their needs so that we can help them, so that we can reduce recidivism, so we don't have people languishing in corrections facilities when they could be on the path to being more productive members of our communities and being returned to their families. And it's just a common sense provision that benefits victims, families, and entire communities. And this is exactly the type of thing that the public expects us to be able to agree on. And yet we are going to end this this conference committee process with not one thing checked off that the Senate has been able to agree on, because we have not had the dialogue of exchanging offers and counteroffers. And so this is a comprehensive bill that increases access to justice and increases public safety in multiple ways. I've only been able to lift up some of those, but it's an incredibly important bill that is about more than just what the media has been talking about. It is more than just what people are talking about on social media. It is a bill that will change lives in a very real way for really thousands of Minnesotans. And I know that there are Republicans and Democrats who agree on many of these provisions, and I hope that we can still find ways to work on these issues together in the coming days, because ultimately conference committees are about compromise, and we have come here ready to compromise, but it takes two. And so I thank you, Chair Mariani, for your leadership in this process. I do think we have done an excellent job of lifting up the voices of people who are not always heard, both in the legislative process and within these systems. And I hope that as we are moving forward, that those are the voices and those are the issues that we are keeping top of mind and close to our hearts, because that is what this is really about, is doing good work for the people of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Indeed. Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn, for your wise counsel and observation, and for the hard work that you've done as chair of the Judiciary Committee this year. We do have a couple of members who have raised their hands. I'll begin with Senator Ingebrigt Brixton.
And you might be... Mr. Chair, members, I was going to hold my comments, but you did ask for comments, so I thought I would give you my thoughts of what has gone on in this conference committee, at least with regards to the public safety that we are all talking about. And certainly, I hope those same people that you've been talking to, Mr. Chair, are listening when I give my few comments here. I'll have to say that I've been here 15 years in the Senate, and I've been on a lot of different conference committees, and I don't know one that's more important than this one. And the reason I say that is This has been billed publicly, as you well know, by not only the legislature, but a large community in the state of Minnesota that, along with the governor, that have demanded police reform and it very much concerns me when I see what's been happening. And just please hear me out. There's no question there has been some lives taken, and unfortunately that comes with the work of policing and those that we charge to protect us. And they're terrible. I mean, there's no question about it. I've heard these testimonies several times before, and I can't imagine being in that position to having to lose a loved one. However, I think what we haven't discussed is that, and maybe we will, about has justice actually been served? And I think back of the two Minneapolis cops, and let's be clear, that's what we're talking about here, is what happened and what's been happening in Minnesota in recent months and maybe even a couple of years with regards to police shootings. And the two deaths that I have noted is that in both cases were, I believe, Minneapolis police officers were convicted, were charged with either murder or higher manslaughter, and they're both now looking at a lot of time in prison. And so to say that the system doesn't work, I it troubles me a little bit. Incidentally, Representative Fraser, there was one victim that was white and one that was black, as you well know. What we haven't talked about, Mr. Chair, and it's very concerning to me, and we've talked about a lot of policy, and I think we'd be foolish to say that we don't agree with some of this policy, and I think we have some mirroring policy in our bill. But what we haven't talked about, we continuously go and down this path of how can we make a law enforcement better in the state of Minnesota when we haven't talked at all about the thousands of very dangerous issues and incidents requiring a arrest in Minnesota. All that good work that kind of goes unmentioned. I don't know if it's just the media or whatever it is, but the statistics show that there's an awful lot of good work being done. I mean, the good work certainly outnumbers the bad and or the mistakes that are made by law enforcement, the very, very terrible mistakes that are from split-second decision-making. That is also very concerning to me. When reviewing some of the House provisions, it's very clear that the focus has been truly on police reform and really not truly on public safety. And I hope you can understand what I'm saying about that. As we take away the tools, the very tools that have been very successful for law enforcement for many years, seems to me that we're not very concerned about the public's safety. I think they go actually unprotected, and the public should know that, should know why this is very important, why we need to move very, very cautiously. That should be certainly a concern of us all, of the public that we serve. It isn't about the conveyance of the laws that the law enforcement officer out there has to go out and enforce that we pass. It is about now, at the end of the day, is the public safe? Have they been safe? And we should not, go without mentioning that. And of course, when you talk about things, and I'll bring it up. It's very clear that if you talk about, and now most recently in the town where the terrible incident just happened in one of the suburbs, when you talk about this idea of, well, we're going to defund the police, or we're going to take huge actions against the police, there's an element out there, and you know as well as I do, Mr. Chair, and both chairs, that the criminals is watching that, and that's very evident. very evident in Minneapolis for sure, and St. Paul, what happens when you talk about taking those squad cars off the road? The public goes unprotected, and you have a huge amount of increase in crime. So I don't know what's happening with the administration and the ones that are, as we call, getting a higher pay grade than you and I. They're making decisions here financially. But maybe the governor, you know, I can't talk for the governor. Maybe the governor is still standing as what he said early on, that there would be no budget bills signed until there's police reform. I'm not sure. If that's the case, then he needs to move a little quicker than what's happening right now. With regards to other bills, and I'd like to make a couple comments. I am a chair, and I'm also looking for budget targets, and I haven't been able to move at all with my chairman of the House. We do have some policies that we agree with, but a lot of these policies that you talk about that we can agree with will eventually end up resulting in some money in one fashion or another. So I just want you, Mr. Chair, and members to understand that this is horribly, horribly important. I don't say it's any more important than HHS or my environment committee, but it is on the forefront, and we have to do this, and we have to do this correctly, or we are going to be in deep trouble if we don't move cautiously. And so let's get those dollars out there so we can get going and take care of the things that we agree with. The finances, again, seem to be the big holdup. I guess we, you know, some bills you say are moving. I don't think any of them have been signed by the governor yet. I don't think that's happened yet. There's a lot of things on the line here, Mr. Chair and members, and we can't move hastily. We can't. I'm not saying we have to take 5 years to get this done, but we have to have everything in place before we start taking action. And those were a lot of words to make that final statement, but I just wanted to voice my concerns, and thank you very much for the opportunity, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Hopefully I'm not muted. I'm checking. I'm not. Thank you for expressing your views. And I heard you right off the bat. You said, hear me out. And that is the duty that we should have of one another. And my hope is that that hearing one another out will then lead to action. You know, it is my hope that, you know, because it sure does look like we're going to go into May 17th without agreement here. And some kind of a special session. My hope would be that our conference committee, would continue to be engaging with one another. I'm not particularly wanting other people to make the kind of decisions that we've been tasked with making, even though we haven't made them to date. But I do think that there are good, strong views and experiences on this conference committee right now. And my hope is that once we move past May 17th, that we can continue to be tasked with working something out. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate the opportunity to be here and be together again today. So I appreciate the narrative that you and the House members spelled out over the last 45 minutes, expressing to the public what your concerns were. But I'm a little bit concerned that that's going to leave those who are watching today, which I assume at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, most people are outside mowing the lawn right now. But those who may be watching this right now, it might leave them with the idea that we are saying no to these things. I think that's a very false and dangerous narrative. I don't know of any conference committees that have signatures on them at this time. Mr. Chair, are there any conference committees that you know of that have signed bills that are going to the governor right now in a budgetary in a budgetary conference committee.
Senator Johnson, what I do know is that there are conference committees that have arrived at policy agreements. I mentioned the Health and Human Service Committee arriving at 60 such policy agreements. That's helpful. It's important that we lay out a framework of where we can agree so that the public, in my opinion, so that the public can take trust that we're going to actually get to agreement. Because most likely this will go beyond May 17th, it really gets a good chunk of the work out of the way so that we can focus on, you know, perhaps those tougher issues. No, there are no conference that I'm aware of, no conference committees that are sending forward a final bill out of their omnibus or a final omnibus bill. There certainly are examples of plenty of agreements within those conference committees. There's not a single one in this conference committee at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's what I understood too, is that differing committees are in differing positions right now. Some have adopted language, some are in a different position where they have language that impacts differently. And that's really priorities of the individuals that are on the committees of, well, we've got this dollar amount, we know what we want, we have seen this, we've heard these issues. We're just trying to filter through it. We haven't said no to one provision yet. We have, unlike those other committees that have thrown provisions overboard, we have not said no to one provision yet. They're all in play. So in some respects, we're further along those committees that have reached a more consensus on a few of those items. So I worry about that. We aren't in a position where we're throwing things overboard yet. We're still negotiating, we're still talking, we're still listening. We've been meeting for over, 2 weeks, I guess it's been, and in digesting these things. And it's critical to get these right. The Senate feels that these are critical matters, and we want everything to be in play. So we're not throwing anything overboard yet. One of the other things I do know about the other committees is that the chairs outside of the committee times have also been communicating with one another, trying to figure out how they can make things go smoother during their official committee time. And Chair Mariani, have you reached out to Chair Limmer on your frustrations outside of the committee time?
Senator Johnson, we've exchanged pleasantries outside of the committee time, but no, neither of us has taken that step toward one another.
So there are a number of things that I think that we need to be looking at. I mean, we can't compare ourselves exactly with every other committee. That's going to be an issue as well. We've got our own priorities, our own bills that we are going to be looking at. So I just don't want to go down this narrative that the Senate and the House can't reach an agreement. I certainly think that we can. Now it looks like it's going to be overtime. But let's not give that impression. I think that makes it harder for us to come to an agreement. We are more than happy to work together to do that. So thank you for a few moments to just chat about that, Chair Mariani.
I appreciate that, Senator Johnson. And I'm trying to hear with my optimistic ear, and I'm hearing an argument for the glass being half full, and I certainly will welcome that from you and the others as we hopefully continue to be the ones that will be making the decisions past May 17th relative to all that. So it's encouraging for me to hear that nothing's off the table. Certainly, as I mentioned earlier, the tougher issue, the apparently tougher issue around law enforcement, we've heard from law enforcement themselves that there are a number of things that they can work with. And so I'm actually encouraged by your observation. With that, members, Representative Frazier.
Mr. Chair, there were, Chair Becker-Finn had her hand up and so did Representative Mueller. So I will defer and wait if you want to give them a call in case you missed them.
Very well. Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so a couple of things, and I do think it's important because we did hear the testimony that, we need to stop vilifying Minneapolis and acting like this is only a problem in one jurisdiction in our entire state, because many of these issues are statewide issues. Brett Huber in Todd County, Hardell Sherrill in Beltrami County, Dante Wright in Brooklyn Center, Philando Castile in Falcon Heights. I mean, I can keep naming people, but the reality is that these issues are systemic. And I think that's another important piece that some of the other comments I think missed. And that is that when it is a systems level problem, it isn't actually that individual person made a mistake. It's that the system was set up for that to be the result. And what we know is that our systems are resulting in things that are disproportionately impacting certain communities. And what we're trying to do is make sure that those systems are working better to serve all Minnesotans. As far as some of the comments about, we are not further along than other committees. Okay, fine. Nobody has said no to anything, but nobody has said yes to anything either. And we still haven't even walked out onto the field together to even trade counter offers. So I think it's... I think the thing I want to make sure the public knows is that we've tried, we've tossed the ball over to the other side. I've bounced the ball to that side of the court and nobody has bounced it back. So whether you've walked off the court or just refused to play ball, either way, we haven't moved things forward as far as discussions. I would also say, you're also welcome to call us as well. If there are things that you want to talk about, I know I have had a conversation with Senator Matthews early on. I had been actually really hopeful with that first offer regarding the same and similar civil law provisions that we would be able to move that forward. And despite a good conversation offline, when we actually brought it forward, we're still waiting on a response to whether it's yes to any of those items. And so I just want to make sure that we're being careful about what we're saying and that we're being truthful with people, because we could have agreed to things. There could be things checked off the list that could be done already and they aren't. And that's what we're frustrated about. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for allowing further comments.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Becker-Fenn. I did neglect earlier to acknowledge that, that early outreach you made to your Senate counterpart, Chair Matthews. And so I want to thank you for that. I think what we're hearing is a bewilderment on the part of the House that while no one said no, we haven't received a counteroffer on any of our offers. But I do appreciate the initiative that you've attempted as well, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I'm sorry, I thought you wanted to go to one of the refs, but that's fine. I just want to make a comment with regards to Representative Becker-Fenn's comments about how careful we should be when, and what we say. And I can't agree more. I mean, this is a subject I think that those that are watching, those that are going to be watching in the future when this bill finally comes to the floor, and I hope it does. However, the names that she put out there, I guess what I have to ask is it's easy to put those names out there and have everybody assume that there was some wrongdoing there. And I would like to ask her if she could tell me if there were any officers charged. I'm assuming there are officer incidents. I know the Philando Castile, because I know Philando's uncle real well. I served on a committee with him this last winter, just a real swell gentleman. But I know that particular case, the officer was exonerated from that. Can you tell me if you're going to continue to use those names, were the officers charged in those incidents or weren't they? I don't know.
And Senator, you're asking Chair Becker Finn?
Yes, I am, yeah.
Chair Becker Finn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And actually, thank you for the question, because the problem is that our system is set up for those folks to not have justice. This is the whole point of the changes that we're bringing forth in these bills. If your only definition of justice is for somebody to be charged with a crime, that isn't justice for any of these people. That is the point. The point is to prevent the behaviors that result in these outcomes in the future. The point is to have a system that holds people accountable in more ways than a beyond a reasonable doubt criminal system. The point is to make sure that those folks who make those bad decisions, who maybe haven't been trained well, who are doing things that are harming Minnesotans, that those people maybe don't continue to be licensed to do what they're doing. That is the whole point. And so I thank you for bringing that up, because whether somebody is charged with a crime or not is not the definition of whether justice has been served. When we have innocent Minnesotans, when we have people who are dying who did not have to die. So I thank you for that question.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Mr. Chair, I'm very concerned. I really think that, some internal investigation or something should really do a deep dive into these cases. If our criminal justice system or our whole justice system here in Minnesota has totally imploded, as Ms. Becker Finn is talking about, that's pretty huge. I mean, that just seems like, wow, all of a sudden, all of a sudden, everything is broken here. I guess it's in the eyes of the beholder, I guess, whether justice is served or not. But I can only go by the same things that anybody and everybody else is required to do in the state of Minnesota. If they commit a crime, they should have to answer for it. And the police are no different. They just aren't. And unless they can be proven otherwise, I'm not so sure that the justice system is that broken.
Well, this is precisely the kind of debate that we do need to be having, Senator. I would submit that we don't have to go into the extremes necessarily in order to address things of primary concern to the legislature. It would seem to me that as lawmakers, our goal should be to make sure that our systems make sure that everybody gets home safely, whether it's a peace officer, or someone pulled over in a traffic stop, or quite frankly, when it comes to our jail system, someone who's simply waiting his term to be able to come before a court. I mean, I think it's our due diligence work. Not just to simply accept the proposition that our systems can't get better, that they can't be better, and that in the light of, some very disturbing outcomes, we certainly owe it to ourselves as well as to the people of Minnesota to dive into those. I do agree, Senator, that it's important for us to move in a way that is informed by experience, that's informed by evidence on the ground, that's going to come from both law enforcement, in my mind, as well as community members and family members. I think that's the duty of the legislature in every aspect of its work, not just in public safety. And so I'm really glad we're opening up the space to be able to have this this kind of exchange. And I wish we had it earlier. But again, my hope is my response to Senator Johnson is that my hope is that once we get past May 17th, because it sure looks like we're not going to complete, that the 10 of us will continue to be the ones at the table, trying to shape what the eventual result will be for the entire legislature to act, and not just, our leaders or somebody else. All right.
I have to agree
100%. Senator, please.
I have to agree 100% with what you said about treating people with respect. I don't care where they come from, what walk of life. They're Minnesotans, they're U.S. citizens, and they all need to be treated respectfully. And if there's any wrongdoing that's going on, whether it's in the jail or whether it's in on the street stopping a motor vehicle or a domestic, I don't care, you name it. They have to be treated with respect. There is no question about it, and I don't think anybody in this committee will disagree with that. Thank you.
Sure, that's a good common ground for us to work from. I appreciate that. Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I agree with all of those things that were just said, too. And I wanted to mention, I don't know if our Senate counterparts have had a chance to read the House Select Committee on Racial Justice report, but I think it's very, very helpful. And if you want, the whole report is really important, but even if you wanted to just hone in on the public safety provisions, they start around page 31. And, you know, a comment was made earlier that somehow our bill is taking away successful tools that police use. And I don't, that is just simply not accurate. And I don't know what that was in reference to. I don't know if it was in reference to the stops for equipment violations. You know, we heard some really good testimony by somebody who studies this at the University of Minnesota, and there have been a number of other studies done on how our roads are actually made safer when we stop these minor equipment violation stops. There's, in North Carolina, they stop more for DUIs and speeding when they stop focusing on these minor things. And the House Select Committee on Racial Justice report actually gives some really important data about Minnesota traffic stops. So just wanted to mention that as a reference point for people. And I also just wanted to clarify something that was said regarding defunding police, because it is not accurate that this bill defunds police. In fact, we provide for more training for law enforcement officers. And the House, to the extent that there is funding of the state level public safety officials, we provide for raises for those folks. So this bill does not defund police, and I think it's really important that the public be made aware of that. That's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Representative Mueller. Thank you for that. I had wanted to mention that earlier. It is a key feature of the House bill that we've got this multidimensional approach to bettering our systems. And I think the House recognizes that involves making sure that there are important resources that are on the table for our law enforcement community to be able to use simultaneously with our expectation of bettering that system, particularly around accountability and trying to do that ahead of the curve and not after something horrible happens. I would certainly put our House appropriation commitments, up against the Senate's approach any day, and hopefully when the targets come in, we'll be able to continue to push forward with that. Very well. I do have Representative Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just that was a lot over the last about 15, 20, half an hour. A very strong attempt to reshape this narrative, a very strong attempt to, again, go away from the facts of what had actually happened in session. The fact that the Senate didn't have any hearings on these police accountability or reform bills, the judiciary bills that are good bills, none. Those are facts. We don't have to pretend that anybody is misinterpreting what happened. Those are mere facts. Check the calendar, check your docket, whatever you want to do. Those things did not happen. That is the inaction that I spoke of when I opened up. And I didn't plan to speak again, but hearing my Senate colleagues, GOP colleagues, try to change that narrative, I had to speak again. But I will say I do appreciate the fact that Senator Johnson said all these things are still on the table. So that does give me, that gives me a sliver of hope that we'll get some good things done. But again, I also heard that we should just accept the facts, a fact that it should be an accepted fact that cops are just going to kill people, that that's just going to happen. That's a part of the deal. That's a part of business. We have to reject that. We have to reject that. And Minnesotans want us to reject that. And we're trying to build a system that will make sure that those things happen on very rare occasions. That is not something that we have to accept as a fact. And it's not a Minneapolis, St. Paul things. More of these shootings and killings involving law enforcement happen in greater Minnesota. And you know how I know that? Because I didn't know that. I know that because we had hearings and we had people testify to that. That's how I know that. So we can't accept that fact. And we have a regulatory system where the chair of that regulatory system says we need to do better, that it's failing, that it's not doing enough, that it's not operating in a manner that is going to stop these negative interactions. Stop what many like to call the bad apples. We have a regulatory system that can do that. And it doesn't just have to be about the fact that someone dies and then there's a criminal conviction. That's a broken system right there. If that's what we're depending on for a judicial system to give us the justice that our regulatory system can give us, because we can prevent some of these things. We have systems like that in place for our teachers, for our doctors, for our lawyers, for our social workers, all of these professions that serve, just like our officers. And, you know, I talked to a retired law enforcement officer just on Friday, one of my constituents. So he sent me an email, and he said he's been watching this. And he said, I had some concerns. And I walked through him. I walked through with him what's in our bills. And I explained to him what's in our bills. And at the end of that call, he said, you know what? That makes sense. It sounds reasonable. But it wasn't what he believed was in those bills. It wasn't the perspective or narrative that he hears, a narrative that we're taking tools away, a narrative that we're going to put our officers in bad situations, because that's not what this bill does. This bill does the exact opposite. This bill was here to raise the bar. This bill was here to help lift up law enforcement, to help create relationships, better relationships. That's what this bill is here for. And I believe if we put these things forward, we'll start to see more applications come in. We'll start to see more people interested in being officers to serve the community. Just like my constituent told me, he became an officer to serve the community. His son is now an officer to serve the community. And he still very much loved this profession. And those are the kind of officers we want. And I believe this, the work that we could do, could lead to a profession where more people will join because of that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Frazier. Well, members,
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Ingebrigtsen, your hand
is. Chair, then I'm going to turn off my microphone. But I have to respond to a couple of things if I can, Mr. Chair, and they're factual in nature. When we talk about spending on training, and law enforcement training is a great thing. It's a wonderful tool. I mean, let's face it. When we put money out there for training, I don't think you can overtrain. Some said, you know, we're all we're going to do is spend our time in school and training. I said, well, don't ever complain about that, because we can also always take that away from you. But I think what happened last year, I believe, Chair Mariani and Senator Limmer, I wasn't on the conference committee, but I think there was a significant. Did I lose you?
Yeah, we're losing you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. So maybe back up a bit, and because we lost the last couple sentences there.
I just want to talk about the training money that was spent already last year on a significant amount that Senator Limmer, I think, had sponsored and everybody agreed to and signed by the governor. So, you know, it hasn't been that we had not responded as of late. We did respond last year with a police accountability bill at that time, and does it need to be fixed? I guess it remains to be seen, but it isn't something that we can say that we have not done anything. I think the committee has put a lot of thought into this. I respect Representative Frazier and what he says, and I wholeheartedly, I don't agree with everything he says, but I wholeheartedly agree that hopefully someday we're going to have people lined up for this job and want this job. But right now, it's looking quite bleak. And Maybe we're just going to have to differ on as to how we make that better, but that's what we're going to be doing, hopefully, in the next days when we get our targets. Thanks again, and I'll turn off my microphone.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. I do think law enforcement, what we heard from law enforcement is that they do want us to make a longer-term commitment to those training dollars, and the House is certainly willing to do that to a point, but we'll certainly revisit, whether that's the appropriate thing or not to do. Hopefully, if we're, continue to be called upon to be able to, construct a final public safety bill. Chair Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a few comments. I really do appreciate this conversation, and I think it's a healthy one. I understand the frustration of members. Quite frankly, I'm kind of frustrated too. When we first began, I had hoped to have let me first back up. I know our communities are reeling from recent police shootings. That is not lost on our viewpoint. And at the same time, as we're discussing management of the criminal justice system, I'm also recognizing the rise in violent crime throughout the Twin Cities and beginning to filter out into outstate Minnesota as well. When we first began the discussion, I had asked for more of a global holistic presentation of a very large, vigorous bill by the House. And instead, kind of got fed by spoonfuls every day, certain aspects of it. And I had asked for, are there anything in all that long list that's really a priority? And unfortunately, I didn't get an answer. And trying to understand the full measure of the House bill is kind of difficult when you have 400 pages compared to our more meager bill that focused mostly on finance issues. However, with the 56 to 60 proposals that you have presented, we carefully listened. We took lots of notes. We had discussions off the camera line, at least on our side. You are not being ignored. We're trying to understand an entire bill. And I hope you bear with us. At the same time, though, we're hoping that we could get budget targets at the same time. And probably more than a week ago, I began to realize, and I think, Mr. Chairman, you and I have been around here quite a long time. And I remember when we served together when I was a House member. And we actually had some shared projects regarding real ID issues, if you remember. And nevertheless, I know that you and I could work together. But I fear that my predictions have come true. Just in today's Star Tribune, if I could just read to you just a brief comment. Today's paper, first page of the Minnesota section, leaders in Minnesota's divided legislature are conceding that they will need extra time to strike a deal on broad numbers around the state's two-year budget, despite a Monday deadline to adjourn. Negotiations between Tim Walz and legislative leaders on spending targets remain slow. And even if a late deal is somehow struck before Monday, lawmakers will not be able to process and pass the massive budget bill in time. And then the final comment, and this is by Majority Leader Winkler in the House, and I quote, at this point in time, it's quite clear that major legislation will still be on hold pending a June special session. This is the reality that we face, and members might as well be prepared for it, unquote. Mr. Chair, as I have been around, my experience was telling me a number of days ago that more than likely this was going to happen, and that as we look at our job in trying to analyze the bill proposals on each side of this issue, it looks like we have to play in extra innings in order to get it finished. And I will commit to you that this is an issue, or this is a collection of issues that recognize not only our community reaction, but our professional law enforcement, as well as our corrections and the other elements of our criminal justice and public safety systems. And these are many of the proposals in our bill are constitutionally mandated. And we certainly recognize our job, knowing that we have a little extra time. We are not going to shirk our duties. You know, they always say that in the legislature, you need a deadline to get anything done. And when that deadline was beginning to disappear, it looked like things would not get done until a more pronounced time. And that's kind of where we're at. I'm hopeful that our legislative leaders in both caucuses, as well as the governor, I certainly have urged my side to get a target so we can get moving. And we want to do the process or the policies first. We're trying to digest a very large bill at the same time. So I hope you understand, and I do appreciate this conversation. I think it's been a healthy one, and I think it began to surface a variety of issues and passions in people that we can better understand each other as we move forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Lemmer. And we did indeed do very good work together well over a decade ago on Real ID. And I think at one point, you and I were virtually the only legislators who had that perspective. And yet we wound up pretty darn near unanimous votes, you know, on that. I think you bettered me by one vote. You actually had a unanimous Senate, and I fell short by one vote.
Mr. Chair, I had half the members to deal with.
I know. Well,
you did.
Oh, Lord. Unfortunately, we went a whole other direction a decade later. You know, just goes to show you that public policy is never over. It's a constant, you know, we have to constantly be at it. Let me just close quickly. Hopefully, I'll be able to do this on an up note, even though, you know, I will have, you know, some perhaps tough things to say. You know, the first is that I certainly have been around for a while, and I don't know whether I've been around longer than you, but I think after a certain point, Chairman, it doesn't kind of matter, right? But, you know, one of the things that I've learned, sometimes painfully, but sometimes joyfully, is that there is both tremendous opportunity and then a tremendous, I don't want to say burden, but a tremendous expectation that's sometimes heavy when you're chairing. Frankly, what I've learned is that within all that is that chairs more often than not have the power to choose more than other members who aren't chairs. Obviously, we're in a bit of a hierarchical system here with, you know, majority leaders and speakers, you know, et cetera. However, there's incredible possibilities when chairs choose to act. And, you know, our, you know, my posture in the House is to choose to act as deeply and as broadly and as quickly as possible in order to keep pace with what's happening in our society. And there's just simply no question that issues of police accountability are on the topmost minds of Americans all across the nation. And so, you know, the proposals on the table are proposals you're seeing everywhere. In fact, even much more radical proposals in many other states, New Mexico, Maryland, of recent note. And the inability to choose at this moment, at least up to now, on the part of our Senate conferees not to engage in those issues is still a matter of choice. And so hopefully what we've done here is created a interaction where we can choose differently going forward, assuming that we're still going to be tasked, and I hope that we are, as I've articulated, tasked with, you know, putting together, a meaningful proposal for both our bodies in the special session to come forward. Frankly, from my perspective, the Senate bill was pretty inadequate coming into this conversation. It ignored some of the major issues, including police accountability, prison safety issues, some of the second chance reform issues that you'll see in the House. And even the Senate Majority Leader acknowledged as much when he asked this conference committee to dive into those police accountability conversations. As I said, I'm trying to end this in a positive note. At the same time, I don't want to, gloss over things from my perspective and the House's perspective, but I do want to build on the last notes here that hopefully there is a deeper understanding because we've heard from people, we've had some testimony. There's much more we can dive into, and I'm hearing a willingness to do more of that if we're tasked with the opportunity to do that. And so I do want to accept your commitment, Chair Limmer, and those of your colleagues, for taking action if we are tasked again, following our May 17th deadline. I just honestly, I got to tell you, if we're not acting, the events will act for us. And I'm fearful that those events are not going to be helpful. You can only look at what happened across this nation last year when an incredible brew of just, deep distrust, disappointment, pain, trauma, coupled with opportunism on the part of, a certain other sectors of our society, coupled with fear, led to some pretty bad outcomes in our society. It doesn't have to be that way. I think the wisdom of our system is that we created these legislative bodies in order to get out in front of those issues and not just let, the broader population, explode out of either frustration or hurt or opportunity to then de facto shape, how our society should look. It's a big responsibility that we have. And it starts with us choosing to engage with one another and to engage in the really tough issues. I'm proud that the House has brought forward an incredible array of issues, including this issue, but also how we support our emergency management systems, our firefighters, how we address prison safety and jail safety, corrections reform, court reform. And in a state with 11 tribal nations, continuing to push forward on how we can live better with our tribal nations within the state of Minnesota, engaging in cooperative, collective policing, corrections work. So much for us to, dig in and respond. And it's simply a matter of choice for us. And so in that spirit, I want to close this out that even though I am terribly disappointed with where we've gotten to at this point, perhaps it lays down a sharper, call for us to choose to act smartly, responsibly, but also very honestly and boldly in terms of the issues that we face in public safety and corrections. I think society should be always running toward public safety, not just because I'm the chair, and I want people running toward me, but because I actually think that public safety and corrections work is one of the powerful things that can bind us together. We've been choosing to have it separate us. Doesn't have to be that way. I just don't know a single person that doesn't want to be safe and doesn't want justice and fairness. On that hopeful note, I'll close this out. I suspect that we won't be meeting again, although technically we could, but I suspect that's not in the cards given that we'll be adjourning in both our bodies in a couple of days. But I do look forward to this continued conversation, and I'm hoping to lobby our leadership, to bring us back together in the coming days and weeks. So with that, members, I appreciate the honesty. I appreciate the openness and the engagement today. And until such time, this conference committee stands adjourned.